Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, it's Monty, and welcome to another amazing episode of the Rockcast.
It's no good.
So glad you could join me.
I bet you knew that, didn't you?
I've got so much to do and talk about on this show, including CD reviews and reading your top tens, and I'm going to be talking a lot about the upcoming Galactic Cowboy show.
Wow!
But I'm going to start things out with a question from Rockcast listener Josh Bosley, who wrote in to say, "Hey, Monty, what's up?"
What a great question.
Well, funny you should ask, Josh, because you would not believe all the stuff that's been going on in my life.
Not much.
Like I told you on the last episode, this summer I've been doing the daddy daycare thing. And during the weekdays, I've been watching my stepkids, one of which is a six-year-old boy. And I've never really been around a six-year-old boy before in my life, but let me tell you, Bill Cosby was right. Because they love the jello pudding and the kids got the brain damage.
How precious is that?
Very little of what they say makes any sense whatsoever, but that does not stop them from asking questions.
Oh, like what?
Where are we going? Where are we at? Are we there yet? No, we haven't left the driveway yet. Is it time for lunch? What are we having for dinner? Can I have a snack? No, we just ate. It's like they're on speed or something. You take them to the store and they're running around and jumping and you're saying, "Don't touch that, don't touch that." But they've got to put their hands on every single item like they've got a compulsive disorder. But then out of nowhere, they'll just take their shoes off and lay down right in the middle of the aisle. Yeah, boys at that age are just so freaking obnoxious. I want to just slap the crap out of them. Yeah, I said I'd like to. God forbid you actually try and discipline a kid these days. If we tried to do some of the things that our parents did to us when we were kids, we'd all be in jail. My dad was a great man and he treated me well. But I will never forget the time he made me go out to find a stick that he could swat my butt with. And I don't even remember if he actually used it on me. But just the torture I went through of actually having to look for that stick was enough to make me never want to throw dirt clods in a swimming pool again. Granted, my folks were a little out there at times, but one year they pulled me out of school and we went on a 2-month vacation. And I mean, can you imagine doing that today? If your kids even missed a few days of school, you'd have Child Protective Services on your ass. But you gotta take into consideration, this was back in the 70s when parents were still allowed to be parents. They didn't have to take into account the child's tender psyche, and they didn't bother trying to reason with us. We were told to be quiet, behave, and if we didn't, we got a big swat. And miraculously, most of us turned out all right.
No, you didn't.
I mean, these days when kids turn 5 years old, they're issued their own personal laptop. Hell, when I was a kid, I not only didn't have cable TV, we didn't even own a TV for a long time.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was awful.
Totally.
I guess that's why these days I'm making up for lost time. And recently, there's been some interesting stuff on my television.
Oh, like what?
For instance, the other night, my wife Lindsay and I were watching the Miss USA beauty pageant. And she actually suggested that we watch it. And I think the reason is that women like hating on other women. Because within minutes, she was saying things like, "She ain't all that, that chick's an idiot, and that girl's face is busted." Now, a word of advice. If you are watching a beauty pageant with your girlfriend or your wife, you do not need to say anything. Regardless of how hot Miss California might be, Just sit there, look straight ahead, and keep your mouth shut.
Very pointed and provocative commentary.
Now, you've also got to be careful when you're watching TV with your kids because you don't know what's going to come out of the screen. And the other night, we're watching The Family Feud, and I'm figuring, well, this will be safe.
Yeah, sure.
Of course, I remember it from back in the 70s when Richard Dawson was the host. And he thought he had to make out with every contestant before they gave their answer. And then they replaced him with Ray Combs in the 80s, and he ended up hanging himself. But I figure, oh well, it's 2013, how bad can it be? So we're sitting there watching it with the kids, and the new host is black comedian Steve Harvey, and he comes out there, and his first question is, name an animal with a big package.
Say what?
Well, it took a few seconds to register, and all of a sudden I looked at Lindsay and went, what the hell? Am I hearing this right? The first contestant was like, Steve, I'm gonna have to say a donkey.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I think it all flew right over their heads, and we weren't forced to answer any uncomfortable questions. And needless to say, I was just happy when it went to the commercial. Speaking of which, I saw this ad for a new Jamie Foxx movie where he's playing a black president. And I'm thinking, okay, is this supposed to be Obama? Because they're portraying this guy as quite the badass.
Yeah, how about that?
Now, I'm not going to accuse Hollywood of being biased or anything like that. But I did just see the new Iron Man movie, and the president in that one was a white guy, and he was a complete boob.
Of course.
He was totally helpless, he couldn't do anything right, had no physical abilities whatsoever. But now I'm seeing previews for this movie with a black president and the guy sliding across the floor with a machine gun.
So what are you saying?
Now, I realize it's fiction, but the thought of Obama doing anything manly like that is quite a stretch. After all, I've seen him throw out the first pitch of a baseball game, and he throws like a girl.
You may want to move on to another topic.
Another commercial that I never, ever want to see again is one of those anti-smoking public service announcement spots. And it's got this poor woman on there going, this is what happens when you smoke cigarettes.
Very uncomfortable for everybody.
Yeah, trust me, I'm not trying to be cruel. But I have never smoked a single cigarette in my entire life, and I just don't need to see these things. Besides, I think people that smoke know that they're bad for them. And while I feel bad for the people with tracheotomies, spare me the commercials, please.
It's very compassionate of you.
Now, I've also been seeing some rock on TV.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, shocking, I know, but if you look hard enough, it's out there. And the other night, of all places, on The Tonight Show, Bad Company played. And I gotta tell you, for a bunch of geezers, they rocked. And I don't care how old Paul Rogers is right now, that guy's voice is still amazing.
There's no way.
Also, a new season of That Metal Show started on VH1 Classic, and it's been pretty good so far. They started out with Jason Newsted, and of course he's got his own band now, as does Rex Brown, former Pantera bassist. And they were both on the show talking about their new projects and new albums. And I just had to ask myself, would anybody really care about the music they're doing now if they hadn't been in really huge bands?
The answer is no!
Not that Newsted and Kill Devil Hill isn't good stuff, but is it really that great?
Well, you don't know, do you?
Maybe it's just me. Maybe I've been oversaturated with music here lately. But Corey Taylor was also on That Metal Show promoting the new Stone Sour CD. And I listened to it and I just kind of go, meh. You know, it's not that I don't like Corey Taylor. I do. I like his voice. I like Slipknot. I just can't get into Stone Sour for some reason.
You are mentally challenged.
But whatever. Those are just a few things that I've been doing here lately, and that's what's up. All right, ever since we announced the Galactic Cowboy Reunion Show coming up in September in Houston, I have been bombarded with emails, comments, top tens, and questions about Galactic Cowboys.
No kidding!
So here now is a special Galactic Cowboy edition of Rapid Fire Emails, Comments, Top Tens, and Questions. Oh yeah, the tickets are on sale, and the response has been awesome. I'm already hearing from people everywhere that are gonna be there. And I'm talking, they're coming from Canada, Minnesota, Colorado, all over Texas. And we are just really excited about this show. However, I've already heard from one person who won't be there. And that would be Mr. David Whiteman.
The new face of evil.
Self-proclaimed super fan of Galactic Cowboys, who, by the way, missed the last Galactic reunion.
Just unacceptable.
Yeah, he's already said once again he will be missing this. So instead, David has sent me two top 10 lists of his favorite and least favorite Galactic songs. Now, I will start with his favorites, starting at 10 and going all the way down to 1. And they would be Red Sun, Captain Crude, Still Life of Peace, Tilt-A-Whirl, Never Understand, Stress, Where Do I Sign, Space in Your Face, My Life, and at number 1, About Mrs. Leslie. Okay, good list, David. You're kind of a prog guy. I understand where you're coming from. I get it.
I don't get any of that.
However, the list that I find more interesting, his least favorite GC songs, and they are as follows. Number 10 off Let It Go, Flag.
Say what?
I said Flag, F-L-A-G. I don't want any email about that.
Uh-huh.
Number 9 is How Does It Feel? Number 8 is In a Lonely Room. Hey, I wrote that.
You suck.
All right, well, I can deal with that because I think some of the guys in my own band didn't like that song. So whatever. Moving on to number 7, Ordinary. That's followed with another ballad. Number 6 is Young Man's Dream.
I mean, this is getting really ridiculous.
Number 5 is Shine. And yeah, that was kind of a pop tune. Not really one of my favorites either. But number 4 is a song I wrote, Easy to Love.
What?
Come on, Mr. David Whiteman. What do you got against love?
This is insane.
Number 3 is another ballad. It's one that Alan wrote and sang. It's called Through. And it is becoming more and more apparent to me that Mr. David Whiteman just hates ballads.
He's an oddball.
Number 2 is an instrumental piece that Wally wrote and performed called At the End of the Day. And I thought that was beautiful myself, but apparently David did not like it.
Who the hell is this guy? Has anybody ever heard of him?
And number 1 on David's list of least favorite Galactic Cowboy songs, Song for Cybo.
I never liked this guy.
Okay, well, Song for Cybo was another instrumental piece that Wally did. And I always looked at it more as just a transition piece between songs. But it comes in at number 1 on David's list.
That's nuts!
So thanks, David. I appreciate your honesty. You're entitled to your opinion. And thanks for only having a couple of my songs on the list.
I can't stand this guy.
All right, let's do some questions and comments. Starting out with Psych Mocheck on Facebook. When, upon finding out that there was going to be a Galactic Cowboy reunion show, said, I'm peeing my pants with excitement.
Hell yeah.
So he's looking forward to it, and I know a lot of you guys that listen to the Rockcast are planning on being there. I know Patrick in Minnesota has said that he's coming and planning on being my base tech again. And also, two-time top 10 champion John Huff from Canada has already told me that he's going to be there. So I think we all need to get together before or after the show and just hang out and have a big Rockcast party. So let me know what you think about that.
I think that's a bad idea.
Mark Michaels dropped me an email and said, "Hey, Monty, glad to see you guys playing together again. Is the feeling different compared to last time?"
Tell me the answer to that.
Well, probably so, Mark. Last time we hadn't played together in over 10 years. This time it's only been about 4, so I'm guessing it won't be quite as nerve-wracking. I'm also looking forward to doing it with the original lineup.
Why?
We had such a chemistry back then. I think we made our best 2 albums back then. And I think it's just going to be fun and drama-free.
I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
I've also had a lot of people who can't make it to the show wanting to know if we're going to do a DVD. And the truthful, honest answer is, I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose there's a good chance somebody will be filming it or recording it, but we really haven't talked about any of it yet. Last time we did that, and then we weren't happy with the quality, so we never did release it. So my strong suggestion would be just try and find a way to get to the show.
That's the answer!
I've also read a lot of comments on Facebook with people saying, "Hey, why don't you just do a tour?"
Okay, why don't you?
Sure, that sounds easy, and we'd all probably love to do it, but that kind of thing takes money.
So?
So if anybody wants to fund and support that, by all means, get a hold of us. I also got some other questions about Galactic Cowboys that weren't related to the show, but I thought you guys would be interested.
Wrong!
Jeremy Brown on Facebook had several questions. First one being, "Hey, Monty, on a future podcast, could you talk about your former manager-producer, Sam Taylor? I noticed that all the bands that he produced don't like to talk about him. He seemed to disappear in the mid-90s after producing The Awful Truth, Atomic Opera, King's X, and Galactic Cowboys. Can you fill us in on his production style and any other info about him, like whatever happened to him?"
These are not hard questions.
Well, Jeremy, this is one of those things where I could literally spend an entire episode or write a book talking about my experiences with Sam Taylor. But I'll do it the best I can, and I'll just start out by saying I had some great experiences with Sam and some very bad ones.
I don't like the sound of that.
I met him when I joined The Awful Truth, and I worked on some of the videos that he did for King's X and Testament, and I was even in some of those videos. And we had a really good relationship in the beginning, and I really looked up to him. And after Alan and I left The Awful Truth, he became the manager of Galactic Cowboys. And he quickly took us into the studio, we made a demo, he put us on tour with King's X opening, and before you know it, 6 months later, we were signed. So he did some amazing things for us early on as a manager, and I will always be thankful for those things. However, after we got the deal with Geffen, things just really got weird.
How so?
You see, the premise behind having a manager is that he works for you. But in our case, we always got the feeling that we worked for him. He was the king, he was the guru, and if we knew what was good for us, we'd just be quiet and do what we were told. And that was fine for a while because, after all, we had a huge deal with Geffen and we were going to be rock stars. But after we all ended up broke and we watched him remodel his house, we weren't so happy anymore. So things just kept getting progressively worse and the resentment just kept building.
This story is truly sad.
As far as production, he would always get with us before we went into the studio and we'd work out all the arrangements with him. And I will always give him credit for some great ideas and I learned a lot from him. He liked to double and triple track the vocals, and I still like that. But there was also some things I didn't like, and if you disagreed with him, it was time for a war. There were incidents on both those first two albums where you could cut the tension with a knife, and he would just get up and leave the studio completely. And it just got so uncomfortable that I was actually relieved when he finally resigned as our manager.
This is a fascinating story.
As far as what he's doing now, I don't really know.
You don't really know anything.
I got an email from him a few months ago asking something about the awful truth, but he didn't say where he was living or what he was doing.
Amazing info.
So those are some of my thoughts on Sam Taylor. Time has a way of healing, so I hope he's doing okay. I guess I'll always have some regrets and bad feelings about some of the things that went down back then. But on the other hand, I will always appreciate the good stuff that he did for us.
Yeah, right. Get out of here.
Jeremy's next question was, what's the story behind the movie Airheads? Why did you guys have a different band name in the movie? And why weren't you on the soundtrack? Well, Jeremy, the deal with that is that after we left Sam Taylor, we found a new management company called Concrete. And at the time, they also had Pantera and White Zombie, and we worked with a guy named Andy Gould. And he was a little guy from England who had all kinds of connections, and in the beginning, it was great. He hooked us up with that tour with Dream Theater, and one night when we were playing in L.A. after the show, he goes, "How'd you like to go out to a movie set and hang out?" And we were like, "Yeah," so we jump in this limo and drive out to the set, and there's Steve Buscemi and Adam Sandler, and we hung out for a while and watched him shoot, and then we jumped back in the limo, and as we were leaving, he goes, "How would you guys like to be in that movie?" And we're like, "Are you freaking serious?" And he said, "Yeah, they need a band to be in this movie, and I suggested you guys, and they need you to write a song." And they wanted us to be kind of this douchey 80s metal band called the Sons of Thunder. And we're like, "Yeah, we have no pride."
That's right.
So literally just a few days later, I came up with this chorus for "Don't Hate Me 'Cause I'm Beautiful," which was based on a TV commercial.
Huh?
Yeah, you remember this commercial back in the early 90s? I think it was for shampoo or something. And this arrogant hot chick says, "Don't hate me 'cause I'm beautiful." And I thought, "No, I got a lot of reasons to hate you, honey."
What are you talking about?
So anyway, that's where the idea for the song came from. Ben wrote the rest of the lyrics. We kind of jammed out the rest of the song and flew out to L.A. and recorded it. The very next day, we were on the set hanging out with Michael McKean from Spinal Tap and Adam Sandler. I got to say hi to Chris Farley, and it was just like we were in a dream or something. The only bad thing for me was that they stuck us in these ridiculous grass skirts and made us look like idiots. And when the final cut of the movie came out, I was only in it for about 2 seconds.
Go!
As far as the soundtrack, well, they left that song off of the soundtrack. And to this day, I don't have a copy of that song, and I don't know anybody who does. However, every now and then, when Airheads plays on cable, a few months later, I'll get a royalty check for about $8.
Wow!
And finally, Jeremy's last question is, "Hey, Monty, is there any chance Galactic Cowboys will do a new album?"
Who cares?
Well, Jeremy, I know a lot of you have asked for that, and a lot of you would like to see that happen.
I am not one of them.
But I'll tell you what, I'd like to, and I guess we'll see how this show goes, and hopefully, maybe we will have some new Galactic Cowboys in the future.
Whoop-dee-doo!
But that's gonna do it for a special GC edition of Rapid Fire. Emails, comments, top tens, and questions. On the last episode, I did a segment that turned out to be the most popular segment ever.
Okay, that's a lie.
So I've got no choice except to do it again. So here now, just for the kids. Oh yeah, Uncle Monty's Listening Corner. Yeah, shut the hell up. Like I said, this is Uncle Monty's Listening Corner. I'm going to play you some stuff out of my CD collection. Some of it you may know, some of it you may not know. What I'm almost positive that you know is that Jeff Tate got kicked out of Queensryche.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but instead of just starting a new band, he just got a bunch of new guys and decided to call himself Queensryche.
What a great guy.
Well, the guys who were in Queensryche said, no, we kicked you out of Queensryche. We're going to be Queensryche. So they recorded a new CD and put one out too. So now, for no good reason, there's two Queensryches, and instead of doubling your pleasure, you can double your pain. Because, as you might guess, I didn't like either.
What a surprise.
But let's take a listen to both, compare and contrast, starting with the new one from the Jeff Tate Queensryche. It's called Frequency Unknown, also known as FU, which I guess is what he's telling the guys that kicked him out of Queensryche. Well, Jeff, so far I'd have to say I don't like you, or at least not this CD. People have been talking about how bad this thing sounds and how it needs to be remixed, but if it's me, I think I'd go back and write some new songs. Looks like you're out of the slave to the lie. You're the bitch, you're the slave to the lie. I got a plan, I'll sell everything. Give it all away. I'd rather live with nothing than be a slave. Dragging your chain. Slave. You come pretty far. Slave. You thought you were a superstar, but you're just a slave. The sad thing is, Jeff Tate is known as one of the greatest metal vocalists of all time, and to me, the vocals on this album aren't very good. Sounds to me like he rushed around, got into a big hurry trying to beat the guys in Queensryche to put out a new album, and what he ended up with was not a very good Jeff Tate solo album. I know some of you guys are going to buy this because you heard Ty Tabor from King's X was on it, but I would save your money. So that was the new one from Queensryche, but now let's check out the new one from Queensryche.
I'm sorry, come again?
Yeah, and the name of the CD is Queensryche. My question to the guys in Queensryche is, if you hated Jeff Tate so much, why'd you replace him with a guy that sounds almost just like him?
Good question.
All that aside, for me, this is better than what Jeff Tate just put out. However, it's certainly no Operation Mindcrime, and at times it sounds more like Dawkins than Queensryche. Strike isn't the only band who's had trouble with their lead singer. A guy named Ronnie Radke used to be the lead singer for Escape the Fate, but he started his own band called Falling in Reverse. Now both bands hate each other, and now both bands have new albums. First up, the new Falling in Reverse, and I can almost guarantee you guys won't like this, but I'm gonna expose you to it anyway. The name of that song and the album is called Fashionably Late, and you may want to hate on them because they play at the Warped Tour, or you can buy their t-shirts at the mall, but if you give these guys a chance, you will find out they are freaking talented.
Don't waste your time, cause they will never win.
Yeah, see what I mean?
No, I don't.
A very interesting album from Falling in Reverse. It goes in a million different directions, from pop to rap to hardcore. So if you want something a little different, you might want to check it out.
No thanks.
Now here's the band that the singer for Falling in Reverse used to be in. It's Escape the Fate. The name of the CD is Ungrateful, and I'm guessing you won't like this either.
Probably not.
Just like an animal locked inside a cage. I'm pacing back and forth, waiting with rage till I can escape. We are the undead, rising from the grave. Of our blood until nothing remains, nothing remains.
That's a great chorus and a pretty good album by Escape the Fate if you like that kind of melodic post-hardcore stuff.
Not interested.
The next selection is from a band called Lifesavers, and it's a project from a guy named Josh Laurie, and if that name sounds familiar, it's because he's a Rockcast listener. And Josh has been a big supporter of me and this show, and so now it's time for me to return the love. Not because I have to, but because I want to. This is a song off their CD, Heaven High.
Another never waits.
Reminds me a little bit of Weezer or The Cars. Definitely has some punk and new wave influence in there from the 80s. So check out the Lifesavers, and if you want to know more about them, email Josh Laurie. He's on my friends list on Facebook.
Oh, alrighty then.
Okay, get ready, because now I'm going to go deep into the bowels of my iPod.
Repulsive.
I'm going to tell you about a band who was around briefly in the early 90s called Life, Sex, and Death. And the other day, I was telling Lindsay about them, and she had never heard of LSD.
Really?
The band LSD. But that wasn't a big surprise, because I think they probably slipped by a lot of people. They only put out the one album that I know of, and it was called The Silent Majority. And the music was kind of a cross between 80s hair metal, Cheap Trick, and Van Halen. The music of Life, Sex, and Death was very cool, but that's only part of the story, because they were one of the most fascinating live bands I have ever seen. You see, their lead singer was this guy named Stanley, and he looked like a retarded homeless guy. And the first time I ever saw him was when they opened for Lynch Mob. And I went specifically to see LSD, and they blew my mind. And if you want to see what I mean, you should probably go to YouTube and check out some of their old live videos. I'm pretty sure the whole homeless guy thing was just an act, but regardless, it was a great high-energy show. The guitar player's name was Alex Kane, and he ended up doing a side project with Ginger from the Wild Hearts called Clam Abuse, and they had a really cool bass player named Ben E. Garr. And I met him a couple of times. He was a really good guy, and he played 12 string through the whole set. I don't know whatever happened to him, but here's that beefy 12 string sound on my favorite LSD song, Tank. So that was Life, Sex, and Death, and I actually saw them three times, the last time being at CBGB's in New York City, and Stanley actually threw up on stage that night.
Gross.
I also ran into Alex Kane back then at a Galactic Cowboy show, and I just wish that band would have lasted longer. They were very unique, and there's just not enough of that around anymore.
Wow, great. Who cares?
Okay, I know a lot of you guys don't like sports, but bear with me. I got some stuff I gotta get off my chest, and it's only gonna take a minute. Or three. Here's Monty's Sports Minute. Today, I'm not talking about baseball, because I don't care about that until the World Series. And I'm not talking about hockey, even though I was gonna watch the finals, but I couldn't figure out what channel it was on or when the games were played. Instead, I'm gonna be talking about the NBA finals, which I watched every single minute of and had my heart broken by the San Antonio Spurs. It's not that I'm a huge Spurs fan, but they were my last hope to see the Miami Heat go down in flames. I've said it before, and I'll say it until the day I die. Unless I move to Miami for some reason, I will always hate the Miami Heat. LeBron James and company are everything I hate about sports today. It's the same reason why I hate Kobe Bryant, minus the rape charges. All you have to do is look up arrogant, self-absorbed douchebag in the dictionary, and you will see a picture of LeBron James hoisting those trophies after Game 7.
You're hateful.
Sure, he's a great player, and he turned it on right when they needed it. But oh God, I wanted him to fail so bad. And it looked like it was all over in Game 6. I thought, finally, the way it's supposed to be. You got the Spurs. They're humble. They're classy. They don't mouth every time they score a basket. They just go out and get it done. And they were up by 3 with less than 10 seconds, and you think, finally, good is gonna overcome evil. All the Spurs needed was one free throw or one rebound, and it was over. But no, like it always does, sports punches me right in the stomach. Ray Allen hits a 3 and the Spurs lose in overtime. And at that very moment, I knew what was gonna happen. I've watched too much sports in my life not to know that the Heat were gonna win in Game 7. But still, somehow, it was so hard to take. It was like the Joker killing Batman at the end of a movie. The good guys are supposed to win. But basketball is not the movies. And Manu Ginobili is no longer worth a crap at basketball. Now, I realize that most of you may not even know who Manu Ginobili is, but trust me, he plays for the Spurs, he used to be great, and he almost single-handedly killed the Spurs in that series, and the last thing I'll remember about him is me yelling, "You suck," at my television screen.
It was uncalled for.
But whatever, another NBA season comes to an end, and frankly, I'm glad. The last two games of the year were classics, it was great theater, and I didn't enjoy a minute of it.
Once we get past sports and music, you're pretty much useless as a person.
And that, my friends, is going to do it for another episode of the Rockcast.
Oh, good.
If you'd like to support the show, please check out my merchandise or make a kind donation at montycalvin.net. And if you'd like to hire me to do a painting, please drop me an email.
I am not capable.
All right, I'm going to play you one last song, but first I'm going to refresh your memory. Does anyone recall back in the mid-80s, everyone was always trying to save the starving kids in Africa or the planet by getting a bunch of guys together and recording a song?
No.
We had that one with Bono, and it was called Do They Know It's Christmas or something like that.
What are you talking about?
And of course, We Are the World, who can forget that?
No, it's not ringing a bell.
But in 1985, a bunch of metal guys got together and they did their version. It had Ronnie James Dio and Rob Halford, Ted Nugent, and just about anybody you could think of that was in metal at the time. Well, I hadn't even thought about that song in years until Rockcast listener Phil Robinson dropped me an email and reminded me. So I thought, what the hell, I'm going to end the next show with that song by Hearin' Aid. Hearin' Aid. Yeah, get it?
I get it!
But that's going to do it for me for now. So until next time, this is Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like unless it's me. And
rock on.
The stars.
This has been Monty's Rockcast.
The end.